slipping real estate, harbinger of doom, or a really good idea? We're going to talk about that coming right up.
You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
Ah! You seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Robert Whiteley, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California. Member of the National Association of Realtors. But please, don't hold that against me. How's everybody doing? Another thunderous Thursday. Perfect. It is a thunderous Thursday. There is thunder and lightning happening right here in Morgan Hill. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if all the power goes out and this show is totally hosed before I'm done. But anyways, we'll hope. We'll hope that the fates are in our favor. Just want to check in with everyone. This episode is sponsored by Moi. That's me. I'm trying to delve a little deeper into my international appeal by embracing moi as a word. If you're interested in a great vacation rental in Hawaii, head on over to www.robertsrentals.us. Again, that's also going to be the subject of probably some future shows about setting up a vacation rental, getting folks aware of your vacation rental. How do you do it? And as I was kind of quickly touching on yesterday, super jazzed with the very first results. I've only done 50% of the marketing that I plan to do on the place, the most expensive 50%. And that has generated already two rentals. Well, actually, you know what? One rental was as a result of that, and one was not. One was a magical arrival. Someone just found the robertsrentals.us website and reserved a week just from finding the site. And that's two folks that are paid, all paid, ready to go. They're confirmed and they're reserved. And then I've got two more that have reserved time but haven't paid yet. So that's pretty darn awesome and a lot better than I thought. I had budgeted for a month of nothing. So to have that stuff happening this early is great. So I'm absolutely going to share with everyone in a more vacation rental focused show. Which I think we can probably translate into other stuff, maybe. You know, vacation rentals are a little specific, but hopefully we can – some of those techniques maybe we can apply to some other things in our lives that we're using to try and generate interest or a little bit of traction to whatever business thing you're doing. So – but we'll talk about that. So I'm real happy with the results, and I'll be happy to share what is going on with everybody in an upcoming show. I kind of wanted to hit on flipping tonight. Flipping is probably one of the things folks ask about the most. And the questions either are what the hell really is flipping? Because there's still a lot of folks who aren't really sure even what flipping is. And then others are, is it still a good time to flip? So just to sort of get the easiest part out of the way, flipping is basically when you buy a property and then in a relatively quick way, you sell it again. Usually after you have introduced some sort of enhancement to the property. So you have bought a property that needed some things that were turning off buyers or caused it to be undervalued in its current state, and you painted it or you updated it or you knocked down a wall. Whatever you did, it dealt with that obsolescence, right? There's – in the real estate biz, they talk about the four or five different types of obsolescence, right? And there's when styles change, there's a bunch of different ones. Which I don't From a vocabulary standpoint, I'm not sure it's even valuable to go down the list of what is the quote-unquote real estate industry's definition of those things. I guess I would say it. You know it when you see it. You know, and I think there's we could probably do an entire show on how to pick a flip a property that's appropriate for flipping. So we won't be covering that really tonight. What we'll be just talking about is, does it make sense to even do it? There's so much talk about how investors have sort of stepped away. We're not seeing as many folks buying for all cash, which is a really big investor thing typically. But, you know, I know plenty of investors who absolutely – you know, there's always this assumption that investors who do this are ridiculously wealthy. And while that can be true, it's not the rule. It's – you've typically got folks who are out there making this happen and they're struggling through getting financing just like anyone else. In fact, struggling more frequently because it's typically harder to get these kinds of loans if right at, up front – you are seen as an investor person, and a lot of these folks are. These aren't usually folks who are buying a home and then moving into it and then fixing it while they're living in it and then selling it. That is kind of flipping, but I tend to refer to that as long-term flipping because it's a whole different vibe than what most people think of as flipping. Typically, flipping is when someone purchases a property and then puts it on the market within a month or two after purchasing it, after they've made some changes. And to sort of give you a little history on flipping, the way the markets were working back when things were going crazy, so 2003, 2004, 2005, flipping was even less involved than that. Flipping involved purchasing, getting into an agreement to purchase a property. And in a lot of cases, what investors would do was artificially delay the closing process so that basically they had a locked-in deal. They knew they were going to purchase it for a certain price. This wasn't horribly common, but I came across a few folks who were doing it. And what they did was work it so that the momentum of the marketplace is what added value. And by momentum of the marketplace, what I mean is if you go into contract on property A on January 1st of whatever year, and property values are increasing at ridiculous amounts monthly, then you're better off having that price locked in for the longest escrow possible because you're not making any payments on anything. The person who owns it is making all the payments. So what you would get is folks who would ask for 60-day escrows. During the process, they would do what they could to try to push that date out. And so you'd typically find – well, it wasn't typical. I mean you frequently found that a lot of these folks would simply push that date out further and further so that you've got a 3-month, 4-month escrow. And then they'd have someone lined up to buy it before escrow even closed. And a lot of times they didn't even need to delay it that amount. They could have a 30 or 40-day escrow and they would already have a buyer interested in purchasing the property that they were in escrow on. And you'd literally have it close one day and now be owned by the flipper. And then either that day or the next day, it would close again and be transferred into the name of the new buyer. So, and that was flipping that really annoyed people. And I think rightfully so. It wasn't ridiculously common. I mean, I saw it happen a couple of times, but it wasn't as common as I think a lot of folks tried to make out. It wasn't a market-defining thing. It wasn't statistically significant. It wasn't something you were going to see that often. More often than not, it still involved finding a property that needed things and then a smart investor addressing those things and then selling it. And I've seen I've seen flips ranging from we bought the property, we tore it down, we scraped the whole house off, and I've even had – now in most of those cases, those folks would use the same footprint of the house just because from a permits standpoint, it's easier. Some people would tear it all the way down to the studs to make it to absolutely make it as easy as possible from a permits standpoint. And other times they'd literally just tear down the whole thing, go through the whole process of getting permits and getting architectural drawings and all these other types of things and build a brand new house. That would be a pretty extreme case. That would be a house that was already in ridiculously bad condition. But it happened. I mean the markets were moving fast enough. And here's the thing. When the markets are moving up, you tend to see flipping happening more, or it makes sense to do flipping simply because the velocity of the market is in your favor. In other words, in a market where each month the property values are increasing, just by having that property, your values are increasing. The amount you can sell it for is going up. In a market where values are flat or decreasing, now flat, it doesn't matter, right? More or less. There's no motivation to sell super fast or to wait because it's a neutral, it's a non-influencer. Or if markets are going down, then you want to sell that thing as fast as you possibly can. You want to make the improvements that are going to give you the biggest bang for the buck, and you want to get that thing out and sold as quickly as possible. In those cases, maybe you're using some unconventional strategies. Maybe you're actually putting it on the marketplace while it's still being worked on, based on the idea that you can show enough artistic drawings or renderings of what the property will look like when it's done that it'll be attractive, right? So whether or not flipping makes sense is based really on what you can accomplish. Again, just like other things we've talked about, the real power and whether or not flipping really works is really the power of what's between your ears. As far as what you know, your knowledge, your vision of being able to see where it needs to be in order to be profitable. And if you make the right calls, you're going to make money. And I've seen investors be able to make money in just about any market, regardless. You're less skilled folks, or your folks who want to put out less effort simply tend to back out of the marketplace when things get a little bit more challenging. Okay. So flipping is generally defined as buying and selling a home in the same calendar year. I define it a little bit more narrowly. Usually when you sell within 2 to 3 months after purchasing it is what I call it, a more aggressive flipping. And I realize also that there are some new rules in place that prevent you from being able to flip too quickly. Now, investors need cash, and as lower-priced distressed homes dry up, they need more cash. And this kind of fits in with what we were talking about yesterday in terms of folks looking for other ways to get money to make this happen. And we ended up talking a little bit about vacation rentals or vacation home loans, those types of things. Home flips make up just 4.5% of sales in the second quarter of this year. That's according to RealtyTrack, and that's down from 4.9% a year ago. Flipping returns, however, which is the total amount of the investment, total return on your investment, increased to nearly 36%, up from 24% 1 year ago. So the calculation here isn't will I or won't I make money. The calculation is how much money will you make? And again, what's going to define how much you make is going to be the decisions that you make. And that starts before you ever even purchase it. That starts with identifying areas that are good for flipping, identifying a property within that area that is a good candidate, identifying the specific problems relating to that property that are holding back its value or making it less attractive to buyers, coming up with a plan to remedy those problems, then remedying those problems, then marketing the property, right? I mean, that's really the life cycle of a flip. And the first thing you should be thinking is not, I can do that. That might be a bit of a surprise. There may be folks out there thinking, wait a minute, did he just tell me I shouldn't think I can do it? You can do it, but you need to have a team to get it done right. By and large, what I'm suggesting is that each one of those steps are not hard things, but if you want to do each and every one of them as well as you possibly can, you're probably not doing this by yourself. There are just too many disciplines involved in doing this right. You're probably going to need a good real estate agent. You're going to need an excellent contractor who can do the work for you and do it in a timely fashion, but can also get it done in a way that allows you to still have a profit margin. Now, why is and in reality, I think the contractor is really right up there in decision making in terms of your odds of success, as it is with realtors. And in my experience with contractors, you're as likely to pick a bad one as you are with real estate agents. There are a ton of horrible contractors out there that either just don't get it done, have crappy follow-up, have crappy communications, have a complete inability to accurately estimate what a job will cost or how long it'll take. And what you need and what you have to have is someone who can not only say, you can still be the vision person here. I don't suggest that you delegate to a contractor necessarily all the things that should happen to a property to make it more marketable. Absolutely ask them for their input because it may spark more ideas in your head, but you really want to develop your skill as the person who has an eye for those properties that need a little love and what kind of love they need, right? That's a unique skill. But it's also that, to be honest, the other thing is an ability to just work right through the fear involved in investing. It's a risk. I mean, we basically are talking about taking what is normally the biggest expense someone will ever have in their lives and making it something you do on a roll of the dice to generate a profit. That's a scary proposition. That kind of fear holds back folks from doing an awful lot of things. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that the number one skill you need is a willingness to blow right through that. That may be the toughest lesson to learn, something that I don't think you can really get taught to you. But maybe you can. Maybe you can start with small things that scare the crap out of you and do them. But I'll tell you what, once you have done this once, I really honestly believe that most people are stunned at what a gas it is. It can be super scary. I mean, you sign documentation that puts you in debt to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if you don't do this right, or this doesn't work out right, you could end up at the other end making nothing, or worse than nothing, being still in debt from it after you've spent so much time, money, and effort. Now, that's just the reality. There's no 100% guarantees in any of this. But if you can have honest team members, a contractor, a realtor, who you can bounce your ideas off of and get honest feedback from, that's what's going to help. Because what I'm going to suggest here is that you should be willing to take the risk, but give yourself a backstop in terms of folks who will be honest with you about what you're suggesting that they do. And how will this help you? Well, a realtor can give you some ideas on what turns on his buyers today. What do the majority of buyers really key in on when they decide to buy a property? Is it something off? Is it something different that isn't easily identifiable, right? Because there's a formula you can follow that's absolutely going to work. You know, fix the kitchen, fix the master bathroom, you're 80% of the way there. You get those two things looking sweet and where they didn't look sweet before, and if you can do it for an amount where you can still generate some profit on top of the costs involved in making those improvements, you're set. You're halfway there. The one thing that I think is always there and is to decide whether or not this is for you. And that's kind of where we're at. And despite the fact we're seeing such a small number of flips happening as a percentage of the market, I don't think that should scare you. There are a ton of folks who sort of float around just going wherever the easy money is. Are we in easy money times for flips? Not really. It's really tough to acquire flips at a low enough price. So it's always going to be a little bit costly and more scary as a result of that. You may be able to find properties at the lower end that you can buy and flip and make a profit. But I'm going to argue that even if you're just talking about percentages of investment here, it's probably not as lucrative as the higher end. Just because stuff at the low end is getting bid so crazy high right now, at least in my marketplace. If you're in a marketplace where values are increasing pretty rapidly, there's very few homes in inventory and tons of buyers, it's going to be a tough one. And what you need to do is find that price range where the landscape changes a little bit, where maybe you can get in there and make an offer that's a little bit more aggressive, get a good price on a property, and then given the right changes to that specific property, generate a profit that way. Let's see. Here's a quote. This one's from CNBC from an article titled "Housing Flipping, It's Riskier But More Lucrative." Quote, "Despite the rise in flipping returns in the second quarter, home flippers should proceed with caution in the next 6 to 12 months as home price appreciation slows and a possible interest rate increase could shrink the pool of prospective buyers for fix and flip homes," said Darren Bloomquist, vice president of RealtyTrack. Now, there is nothing in that sentence that he just said that I think should stop someone from flipping. Home appreciation, all we're talking about is price momentum. And in terms of what I suggest home flippers do, I never suggest you assume any kind of appreciation in the property during your holding period. I think that because an appraiser isn't going to. An appraiser will later, once there's an offer, take a look at your property. But for all intents and purposes, the only value of that property is what it was last paid for, and that's what you paid for it. So in calculating what you think you can sell for the house, it is best, I think, to ignore market influences if they work in your favor. And why I do that is because I think it builds in a buffer to allow you a little bit of wiggle room so that I'd rather have you make a surprisingly higher amount than you expect than not meet your number, because that could be a very catastrophic thing for you. The other thing that they mentioned is interest rate increases. So I would, from a guy watching the marketplace standpoint and watching what the Fed has done in the past, I would say even if interest rates are increased sometime in the next 12 months, and it's interesting that they give a 12-month window for that because most people are shooting for September for interest rates to go up. But even if it happens in September, as I've said before, I think the rate is going to be such a small increase. It will be the flag-waving moment of the year for the Fed to say that they're demonstrating their faith in the upturn in the economy, and as a gesture of acknowledgement of how wonderful things are now that we're raising interest rates. But at the same time, they'll be raising interest rates at such a ridiculously low increment that it'll be negligible. It may have some sort of an effect on your costs of borrowing, but I think it'll be a very small amount. I think we'll still be in the 4% range. I don't think we'll be anywhere near 5%. I think we'll be between 4 and 4.5 tops. And for those folks out there who are saying, well, that's ridiculous, that would be such a ridiculous increase, you have to think about interest rates historically, and we're so spoiled today on interest rates, and I'm sure that doesn't soften the blow of having to pay 4.4 instead of 3.9, but it's still ridiculously affordable to borrow money, and will that potentially slide down the scale a little bit? Yeah, but here's the thing: when you're buying, you need to buy smart. So typically, the higher you buy above the bulge in the market, right? So if you take the promes that are selling and you arrange them by price, then you see how many sales there are in that price point. If you look for the bulge, it's typically a bell curve. It kind of starts in this market, it's probably more like a cliff, right? Where it comes along, it maybe starts off high, maybe even goes down a little bit, but then drops at a higher price point. You just want to be priced sort of at least as close to that hump as you possibly can. You don't want to be way off on the end at the super high price stuff for a couple of reasons. One, that is very thin air to play in, just because so much money is required to even acquire the property you're going to make the improvements in. You want something that you can manage as an investor, but you also want something that's going to appeal to as broad a spectrum of buyers as possible, just because it increases your probabilities. Can you be a little bit beyond that bump in the middle? Yeah, I think you can. I think it actually can make sense to be there because there's less competition for properties just beyond that point. And I think the level of how lucrative those properties are can be enhanced, particularly if you're getting something that suffers from some problems. We're not talking about a house that everyone's going to say wonderful things about. We're talking about how homes you probably wouldn't like when you first look at them in terms of a typical buyer, right? The homes that are on this list that are great candidates for flippers, there's a funky smell, right? There's super out-of-date 70s green shag. There's a horrible kitchen with do-it-yourself cabinets that were installed. There's a bathtub where you're not even really sure what color the tub is supposed to be. There's that kind of stuff. So you're not looking for that house that's in amazing, ready-to-sell condition, because that's not the point. The point is for you to take something that's not in that condition and make it in that condition. Let's see. The average flipping returns are up substantially from a year ago at the national level, and in moderately priced markets such as Miami, Atlanta, Phoenix, and Minneapolis, flipping returns are softening in some of the higher priced markets such as San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, and Los Angeles. That was also from Darren Bloomquist, who's the vice president of Realty Track. Nevada and Florida, where the share of distressed homes are still relatively high, are still seeing the most flipping action, but Chicago, Dayton, and Baltimore offer some of the biggest gross returns. Washington, D.C., where home prices have flattened, flipping is still popular but tricky. There has been a real sea change. You have to put a lot more work into the homes today, said Christopher Harrison, a real estate investor who is flipping a home in Northwest DC. It is interesting because when the market crashed, you had a lot of investors making a ton of money on flips. You didn't have to do work to. Yeah, so we already kind of covered that. Let's see. There was an example one. And there's also a cautionary tale here I wanted to share as well. One property that this person, this investor person, is working on is in a pricey neighborhood with desirable schools. He had to put about $400,000 into the property, which he purchased for about $700,000. He doubled the size of the 1,800 square foot bungalow and listed it at the beginning of July at just over $1.5 million. He has now lowered the price by $54,000 and is considering doing more work to the property, possibly adding a parking space. And he had, I don't think he's, according to this, it doesn't sound like he sold it yet. Flippers are now taking on average of almost 6 months to rehab their homes, which is an 8-year high according to Realty Track. So are you getting into something that's going to make you ridiculous money in a ridiculously short amount of time? No. The data we're seeing here is that folks are tending to take on bigger jobs. I mean, 6 months worth of rehab work, that's a lot of stuff. But they're doing it because they need to really increase that appeal. It needs to, once it's done, be the shining jewel of a home at its price point. And that's really the key. I mean, there's several things happening here. One, I don't think the argument can ever get made that it never makes sense to do flips. I think it makes sense to do flips if you're building a better product. But you have to acquire it correctly. If you're buying a property that's already halfway decent and it's not selling at its current price point, well, then maybe you need to look elsewhere. You need something that needs a little bit more work. And then once you get in there and you get it all done, you're just simply making it more marketable, but you're doing it in such a way that the work you do generates more profit than what it costs to change it. And is that a tricky balancing act? Absolutely. But again, it comes down to how smartly you choose your partners. With the right information before purchase, during purchase, and after purchase, when you start doing that rehab work, you're absolutely going to be able to pave a way for you to make a profit. Is it going to be a gigantic profit? In some cases, it could be ridiculous. In most cases, it might be tens of thousands. In a lot of cases, it may be tens of thousands of dollars at median prices. I would guess that this guy stands to make, given his numbers and where he's at and what he's dropped it to, he'll probably walk away with, if he sold it for what he wanted, he would have made $400,000. He took off $54,000. I'm willing to bet he'll walk away with between $250,000 and $300,000. Right? Now, clearly, this is somebody who's doing work at a level that the average person can't. I don't know if this dude wrote a check for $700,000 when he bought it and then another check for $400,000 for the work that he had to do on it. Most of us are folks who are going to be getting a loan for this kind of stuff. So it's a different kind of game. But you can easily translate the same strategies in lower price points. And that's actually one reason why when I was speaking earlier, I said you probably don't want to be on the top end of that bell curve. Why? There's not enough buyers up there. He may end up making that amount of money, but he may have to hold that thing for a lot longer than he wanted to. And I'm guessing he's got holding costs of some kind. At the very least, it's property taxes. And probably he's got a loan on this thing somewhere. So he's got holding costs. He's paying something every month for that sucker to be sitting there unsold. He definitely went up to the higher elevations and he's apparently got experience. He says he's an experienced investor. And that's great. If you do fewer deals per year that make you more, that's always a great strategy. But sometimes it makes more sense. If you're a beginning investor, I would never suggest starting here. If for some bizarre reason you've got the financial resources to do something at this higher level, I still don't suggest you do it. I would still suggest you start closer to the top of that curve. Just beyond it is probably a pretty good sweet spot if you do a little analysis of the area where you live or the area where you're thinking of investing, simply because you're going to generate more experience. You're going to be able to do more frequent deals. Come the end of that year, will you have worked a little bit harder than that person? Maybe. You know, it depends. It sounds like you put an awful lot of work into this one. The same, if you do 6 months of work on a place and you on one place, or you buy three places and do 2 months of work on each one of those, right? I think you can, he potentially can make the same amount of money in the same amount of time in terms of work, but the turnover is more, is closer to being guaranteed than with a higher end thing like this, which is, you know, kind of the point I'm trying to make. The fewer, what else? And we're seeing, okay, and they talk about how these renovations are helping companies like Home Depot and Lowe's, which is a nice little side benefit. Quote, the fewer foreclosure deals and longer flipping timelines that we see in the data demonstrate that flippers are getting squeezed on both sides of the profit equation. Experienced flippers will often need to enter into higher risk markets with a less solid economic fundamentals to chase better yields. And I can see that, right? That's one reason why I'm saying don't shop at the bulge. If you shop at the bulge, the competition is too tight. There's too many folks buying there that will be willing to take subpar properties and then do them themselves or just live in them. So I can see why some investors would be drawn to these higher numbers. My suggestion would still be to not go to that top end. You know, be a little bit over that bump, but not way up at the top. I think there's far more risk being taken there. And as a cautionary tale in this article, flipping is not always profitable. Flips on the lowest priced homes below $50,000 saw negative returns in the second quarter. The sweet spot appears to be homes priced at $100,000 to $200,000, which yield on average a gross return of 44%. And my suggestion is those aren't even numbers you want to be looking at. You want to go with the hump, because the hump is different for each computer. You know, is there a more dignified word I could come up with for that? Because this, they're going off of national averages, right? Well, you don't live in a national average. In fact, the national average may not exist anywhere in the country. That's the nature of a national average. What you want to do is figure out in your marketplace where the sweet spot is. So, you know, that's something just to keep in mind. This isn't a one size fits all deal. You need to find the right spot given where the property is located. These numbers may make complete sense in that mythical average place that doesn't exist, but these numbers absolutely don't work in a place like Silicon Valley, for instance, or San Jose. The sweet spot is not homes priced between $100,000 and $200,000. It's probably 2 to 3 times that. So 4 times that possibly. So it's absolutely market specific, and that's something you'll have to figure out. In terms of it's basically the same article. It's flipping returns rise, but flips as percentage of sales drop. So it's just fewer people out there doing it. And it means the folks who actually are willing to invest the time and effort to make a superior product are the ones who are sticking to it. It doesn't mean they're better at it than you are. Maybe because they do it, and so they have that practical knowledge of actually doing it. But I don't think that should be something that intimidates you. If you're someone who's good at spotting what's wrong with a property, I mean, and you probably are. I mean, how many homes have you looked at when you were shopping for your own home and went, I don't like it for this reason, and this reason? Well, odds are your gut instinct on that is pretty good. Now, you may be weak in the what to do about it part of the deal, but if you've got the time and willingness and credit rating to make it happen, find yourself a good contractor, find yourself a good realtor, and have them participate in the process. Bring that contractor with you to the house and have them give you ideas. I've got a couple of go-to contractors that I'd use in a heartbeat that have great ideas for stuff to do to properties. According to the numbers that I'm seeing from Housing Wire, a total of 30,013 single-family homes were flipped, sold as part of an arm's-length sale for the second time within a 12-month period in the second quarter, accounting for 4.5% of all single-family home sales during the quarter, according to RealtyTrack. Is there anything? Let's see, that's basically the same data we just talked about. The average gross profit, flipping exercise typically runs between 20 and 33% of properties after repair value. For completed flips in the second quarter was 70,696, up from 67,753 in the previous quarter and up from 49,842 a year ago. Yeah, I'm not seeing other super sexy data here. Among metropolitan statistical areas with at least 50 completed single-family home flips in the second quarter, Those were flips accounted for the highest percentage of all home sales were Fernley, Nevada, 11.4%, Miami, Florida, 9.6%, Palm Coast, Florida, 9.2%, Memphis, Tennessee, 9%, Tampa, Florida, 8.9%, Deltona, Florida, 8.7%, and Sarasota, Florida, 8.1%. Let's see. Even with our strong rise in prices, investors remain savvy and are enjoying continued success with increased profits per flipped home in South Florida. So South Florida is clearly one of the big beneficiaries of this trend of higher returns on flips. Let's see. Among zip codes with at least 15 completed single-family home flips in the second quarter, those where flips accounted for the highest share of total single-family sales were East St. Louis, Illinois, Opa-locka, Florida, in the Miami metro area, Las Vegas, East Point, Michigan, in the Detroit metro area, and Warren, Michigan, in the Detroit metro area. So these, if you're near these areas, I mean, maybe these are things to look into. Other major metro areas where the share of homes flipped in the second quarter was above the national average included Vegas, Nevada, Detroit, Michigan, Baltimore, Maryland, Los Angeles, California, Orlando, Florida, Phoenix, Arizona, and Jacksonville, Florida. Here's an interesting stat, too. Among zip codes with at least 15 completed single-family flips in the second quarter, those with the highest average flipped price were – yeah, this is my town. This is my area. 95125 San Jose, $1,953,033. And there are areas where that's not super high-end, believe it or not. 90065 in Los Angeles for $716,656. Now remember, these are averages, the highest averages where at least 15 flips were done. So ridiculously small property sample, right? 85018 in Phoenix, $679,000. 33134 in Miami, 561,000, 97202 in Portland. That's the numbers I'm giving you here are zip codes. 548,903. There were a total of 211 zips with an average flipped price above 1 million, but the majority of those had fewer than 15 total homes flipped in the second quarter. So is it still profitable to flip? Absolutely. In fact, it's according to these numbers, it's more profitable than ever. It's just the flippers are a little thinner on the ground, and I'm not going to argue that it's because the smart investors got out. I'm going to argue that it's because the smartest investors stayed in flipping. There's always going to be a place for someone who can see what a property is capable of being. And if you're somebody who has even a little bit of willingness to apply themselves to seeing it that way, I think that it's an – and let's say you're not – let's say you're someone who enjoys real estate. You like the idea of flipping. You love the idea of taking something that is really not filling a need or isn't living up to its full potential and making it live up to its full potential, but you suck at spotting those things, then you need a team member who doesn't suck. I'm not sure what – you need to figure out what you bring to the equation. Maybe you're the money person, right? Maybe you're the vision person. Maybe you're the contractor. Maybe you're the person who can do the work, but you can only do what you get told. You're a person who, if someone tells you to do X, you can do X and it'll be awesome when you're done, but you're not the guy really with the vision. You're the dude who listens to a vision and implements it. Well, then you need someone like that on your team. Maybe within your family, maybe it's your sister, maybe it's your wife, maybe it's your mom, maybe it's your dad, who knows, but you need to find that person who can play the part that you need to fill to make this happen. And again, you know, I love giving you things in terms of what to do to try to make things succeed for you. I'm going to suggest this isn't just a strategy for real estate. This is a strategy for whatever you're doing. Let me give you a small example. So I have a friend who wants to write a kid's book, a child's book, and she's got a great idea, but she is not an artist. So what is she doing? She has got her sister, who is an artist, involved in doing it. So, and what's the part I'm playing in that? I don't know anything about writing books, nothing. But I'm pretty good at organization and I'm pretty good at setting goals based on where you're trying to get. So I schedule a meeting with her every couple of weeks and I poke her with a stick in each one of those meetings and say, here's what you have to accomplish by the next meeting. So And maybe that's something you need in your life. You need someone to just be that third person that keeps you on track. So much of whether or not you're going to succeed or not is simply that. Having somebody who's not going to cut you slack when you don't do what you're supposed to do when you're trying to move towards a goal, right? Because she's got a comfort zone. She's got a job, so she's making a certain amount of money that she's at least paying the bills. But maybe she's not feeling totally creatively satisfied. Maybe she wants to do this to generate more income. But it's what she wants, right? That's all of us have to define what the quan is for us, right? There is no universal quan. Maybe for one of us, the quan is all about money. And I suppose there are folks out there that are that way, and that's fine. I think that's a really super limited way to look at where your moment of complete fulfillment is. I'll be honest. I've been the real estate agent guy that closes a ton of deals and makes a ton of money. It's not enough. It just isn't. It makes it easy to pay the bills, but it there's a lot of other things in there too. If I was willing to continue to do some of the things that the common practice is in real estate, I'm sure I would still be that guy, but I'm not, right? My quan is doing it different. You got to figure out what it is for you. And I'll be honest, I still haven't figured out what mine is. I actually had a conversation with a guy at lunch today where we were talking about, you know, how do you – I guess it falls into two groups of people. People who can ahead of time say, here's a list. And if all of this was going on in my life, that would be my quan. I would be totally content in my existence if I had this list of stuff. And then when they achieve it, they can look at it and feel it and get what they're at, where they're at, and say, yep, I'm in the quan. I can feel it. I'm there. I have achieved the quan. I'm not that guy. I'm the guy who, you know, comes up with an idea. This would be awesome to be this. Maybe the top producing agent making X amount of money, right? I get there. I check out the view. No, okay, sorry. This wasn't it. This is great and everything, but there's more. There's got to be more here. And I don't really like the way that I'm doing this. I don't like the process I'm engaging in to make this happen. So, and I know there's other people out there like that. So, part of this thing that I'm trying to do is to help people figure out their quan. And if you can't figure out your quan like I can't, you need to just keep doing something, different things, until you hit something then where you go, hey, you know what? That felt pretty good. I like that. I feel that puts a smile on my face. That makes my day a little better. Let's figure it out together. Let's find out what your freaking quan is. Either by trial and error, or maybe you're one of those lucky bastards that can just write it down on a piece of paper because you know exactly what it should be because you're able to visualize it. You dirty dog, I wish I was you. And then move forward towards it. But sometimes you need a little help with the moving forward part. You got to be honest with yourself and figure out where you don't have the skills to make certain parts of it happen. So just like with flipping, just like with anything else in your life, figure out where you're weak. And if you're honest, if you can be introspective and honest enough with yourself to identify your weak spots and find someone who is strong there, I swear to you, you will be unstoppable. The folks I know who are the most successful aren't the folks who are the most successful because they did what they did. They are the most successful because they were able to find the folks who could act in support of the effort to do what they did. Right? They were able to put together a team. That's what you need to do. Even if it just involves having your sister do the artwork for the book you're trying to write for kids. All right? Okay, folks. I think that was a pretty good one. We haven't really talked about flipping in a super long time, so I hope that was beneficial for everyone. Feel free to reach out to me via the websites at www.therebelbroker.com or at www.soldbyrobert.com or... Man, am I going to have to add the third one now all the time? www.robertsrentals.us if you're down for a awesome rental experience, if you want your tropical vacation dreams to come true on the beautiful island of Oahu, Hawaii. Feel free to go visit. Take a look at the photos. See if it's your speed. And that's it. So thank you very much. You can also, as I said, you can go to therebelbroker.com or soldbyrobert.com. Click on the Contact Robert link. Share with me your stories. What's your quan? Do you know what your quan is? Do you have a plan to figure out what your quan is? If not, come up with a list of different things you're going to try to see which one of them makes you feel like you're getting close. That's really the only way we can go. But share those with me. I'd love to hear your stories, as always. And that's the best way to reach out and share them with me. Thanks again, everyone. And I will talk to you tomorrow.